What's up, everybody? It's Lee, otherwise known as Intuition, and you're listening to Kinda Neat. Thank you guys for tuning in. Episode 25, we're at our quarter century. It's amazing. It's going. We're doing it. Follow us on Twitter. You can follow me at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the board, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, Mr. Database at I Am Database. Both of us have the same Instagrams, slanging them filters. You know how we do. You can follow us as a unit on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat and our YouTube channel, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat. And then, of course, you can find us at our content portal, kindaneat.net. I know a few, it must be like fucking 7 episodes ago now. I mentioned that like we're trying to redesign our logo and stuff. And some of you guys have submitted like probably maybe like 5 or 6 submissions. I haven't quite found that one yet. So if you guys still want to submit, you guys can feel free. It's going to just be an ongoing process. When somebody gives me one where I'm like, whoa, holy shit, like I'll pick it. And for those of you that have submitted so far, thank you so much for your contributions. I do appreciate them. And there are a couple of them that I thought were really fucking tight, but just not quite what I'm looking for yet. So keep working. I appreciate it. Today we have on Rhetoric Ramirez. Rhetoric is an OG. There's really no other way to put it. Like, he's been in LA doing the rap shit, and we go way back into history in this one. And it was, for a rap nerd like me, it was super tight to hear about like early run-ins with fucking Will.i.am and like seeing Merce back in like 95 and shit. Like, it's crazy. That stuff is the lore of rap nerds like me. Like, we love it. Rhetoric is also known for, in the LA scene for a while, he was knocking some fools out here and there. And I've talked about it before. Like, I'm not much of a fighter. And we talk about fighting a little bit on here. I don't really have that rage in me. But I do want to tell you guys the story of the only time I've punched somebody in the face, because I think it's kind of funny. So back in like 06, I was still living in Santa Barbara, but I was coming down to Santa Barbara for shows all the time. And there used to be a place back then cracking called The Terrace in Pasadena. It's still going on. I don't know that it cracks as much anymore, but shout out to The Terrace. And so for a while, they were having No Can host shows. And then I started going a lot. And then I was hosting shows on nights that he couldn't host. And so we became fixtures around there. And it was my first taste of like feeling like Mr. Cool Guy that could get into any show that he wanted. And I was seeing all these artists that I really liked. And like, you know, the bouncers were cool to me. I never had to wait in lines. The bartenders were like always nice, pretty girls, and they would give me free drinks. And you know, we were on stage all the time getting to rap and getting to crack jokes, and it was tight. So one night, I can't remember what show it was at, but this was like the time, you know, I've had some embarrassing outfits in my past. And this was back in the time, like 2006, when Kanye was first starting to kind of like really get huge. I remember I was wearing this sweater that I had found at some fucking boutique on Melrose. And it was like an Argyle sweater that went from, it was like cream colored at the bottom. Then it went to brown. Then it went to pink. So it was like Neapolitan ice cream. And then it had a couple of diamonds on it that were orange. And it had like a little a crest on the chest and everything. And I remember I was wearing, like I said, there were some pink diamonds in the Argyle. So I was wearing a pink shirt underneath, like a button up. And then I had a fucking tie on. I was getting my fucking Farnsworth Bentley on that night. I was looking like a real fucking, I don't even know. It was like some real yuppie shit. Like, but at the time, it was very forward thinking. Like, the homie Kale, who I'm eventually going to have on the podcast, he used to be very much like, you know, you like my only white friend with style. Like, he always thought that I was one of the best dressed in LA. I think he made like a MySpace post about it, like put me as one of the best dressed indie rappers in LA. So, you know, shout outs to fucking Kale for recognizing game, recognized game and all that. So I was dressed up that night, and for some reason there was this real rowdy couple of guys that were there. And this was still at a time when like outside of the shows, ciphers would crack off. And so this dude was out here ciphering, and he was like a real like rowdy, I think he was an Armenian dude, and he was with a really tall, lanky white dude like who had red hair. He must have been probably 6'4", but real skinny. And then the Armenian dude was probably like, I don't know, 5. He was like my size. He's like, you know, 6 foot or 5'11", and you know, built pretty much like me. And somehow this dude is outside being real rowdy. The Armenian dude, he's like being real rowdy, like rapping at people, but rapping like, he could rap, but he had no, like, he wasn't graceful at rapping. He was rhyming his words, but he wasn't tight. But he had a group of, like, cheerleaders with him. Like, the tall redheaded dude was one of them. And then he had a couple other dudes that he was with that were, like, saying, oh, my God, he's so tight. Listen. listen to how fucking tight he is. He's such, oh my God. And he's rapping against world-class dudes like No Can. And somehow they get to battling. And like the battle, it, like sometimes in street battles, like when you have a group of cheerleaders around you, you don't get to get your, the opponent doesn't get to get their lines off like they should. And so, you know, I noticed that James was getting a little flustered, like, because all this whack shit that this Armenian dude was saying was getting all this love, and the shit that James was saying, they were like booing and shit, which is inappropriate. And so it was like me and the homie Aspect One and James and a few other people were sitting there listening to the battle. And then eventually it was like the show was getting over and it got to this point where it was like, all right, cool, we can't stand in front of the venue anymore, let's go around the corner and battle, right? Let's go around the corner. And it became a thing of like, I could feel it was bubbling, like something was gonna happen, somebody was gonna end up fighting, like it was getting tense, you know what I'm saying? And so we go around this corner to another street in Pasadena, and it becomes a, all right, that's it, no crowds now, like you two just battle and let's see who really will win. And so James is battling and he's rapping, and then the Armenian guy gets to rapping and he starts rapping, and then he says something along the lines of, I hang N-words like the KKK. This is a, for all intents and purposes, a white dude going, I hang N-words like the KKK. And at that point, everybody goes, oh, wait a second. Whoa, whoa, whoa. You know, one of the homies gets pissed off and somebody pushes somebody and then punches are thrown. And all of a sudden, it was just a full on melee breaks around me. It just all happened so fast that I'm kind of standing there with a flabbergasted look on my face, just going like, wait, oh, shit, who should I punch? What should I do? And I turn to the side and this the tall, lanky, redheaded kid. As a side note, at this tall, lanky, redheaded kid, I had called him a couple. I told him to like shut his cracker ass up at one point, which like offended him because he's like, what the fuck, man, you're white too. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm not that white. I was very confused at the time, apparently. And so like I also called him Tintin, like I thought he looked like Tintin, the cartoon character. He kind of looked like a tall, lanky version of Tintin. And so yeah, we had already had our little shouting matches together at the original during the original part of the battle. And so all of a sudden I look to my right, I'm left-handed, so I look to my right, kind of over my right shoulder, and here goes the redheaded dude about to kick one of my friends in the face who had fallen on the ground. So I used to play some baseball. I know how to throw. I've never really thrown a punch, but I know how to, like, throw. So I treated it like I had just picked up a grounder from the outfield, and I fucking crow-hopped. Like, I just lifted up my right leg, skipped a couple times on my back left leg, and I fucking threw a punch like I was trying to throw somebody out at home plate from left field, and I fucking walloped him. I hit him so goddamn hard, I'm ashamed to say he didn't fall over. Like, I hit him hard enough to where my hand hurt, and he kind of stumbled. He stumbled and he looked like a drunk person for a second. Like, he tried to brace himself like he was gonna fall over, and then it just seemed like slow motion. He looked over him and he goes, why'd you do that? And I start fucking cracking up. And at that point, somebody starts yelling, yo, police are coming, police are coming. And so everybody starts to run off. And so that was it. We never really got to keep throwing hands. It was just like, I fucking socked him. I guess maybe it was kind of, I don't know if that's a sucker punch or not. I feel like he was going to kick my friend in the face while he was on the ground. So he definitely saw the punch coming, but there was pretty much nothing he could have done about it. And basically my punch intercepted a kick to the face. And man, I hit him hard. And the funny thing is, this girl that was promoting at the terrace at the time, I really liked her. She's a very nice girl. I thought word was going to get back to her that, like, oh, you know, Lee and all of his friends were fighting behind the thing. So I was, like, all worried that she was, like, going to be pissed and we weren't going to be invited back to the terrace anymore. But then it turns out she called me. She's like, oh, my God, I want to apologize so much for that fight that broke out. Those two dudes, I actually know them from school. Like, they go to school with me and they're fucking assholes. And I don't know why they were there and I'm so sorry. And she's like, I actually saw the redheaded dude the next day at school and he had a big fucking bruise on his face, and I was like, fuck yeah, because that was my bruise. And so yeah, that happened. And the thing that I remember most about it is, like, the next time I saw Kale, he goes, I'll tell you what, man, I don't know why you threw that punch, because I would never let any blood get on that elegant motherfucking sweater. And I was like, that's a good point. I should have been more careful about not getting blood on the sweater. I didn't get any blood on the sweater, but that sweater is embarrassing as fuck, and I hope no pictures of it ever surface on the internet. And so anyway, that is my story of the only time I've ever punched somebody in the face. Now, back to my man that we had in here today, Rhetoric. like I said, this conversation, it went by really fast. We did like an hour and 15 minutes, but it felt like a half an hour. And I feel like those are always the best conversations. So when they go by fast, I feel like they're very interesting. And I got sucked into him telling stories about back in like 95, going to Foundation and going to Good Life and going to Project Blowed and like just crazy stories. So I think that you guys will enjoy this podcast if you're a rap nerd like me. And without any further ado, let's get right into it. This is my conversation with Rhetoric Ramirez. I felt like we were in an episode of Saturday Night Live trying to get you here, man.
Yeah.
You started from as far away in LA as you could possibly get here, because we're in Atwater and you were starting in Santa Monica.
Yeah.
It was just like some cliche fucking LA traffic
shit. Yeah, take Marina Del Rey.
The other week I had Blockhead on, and he's a New Yorker, of course. And like, it was the day after the big explosion over here. Did you hear about that?
What big explosion?
Like basically a car ran into a gas truck. The gas truck tilted over, fucking explodes. Nobody gets hurt, but like literally the gas was flowing into the sewers, so the sewers were on fire, and they had to like shut everything down on this side of the city. So like fucking the traffic over here, right where the studio is, like on where the 5 and the 2 intersect, it was completely shut down. So he's staying like what should be a 2-minute drive from here, and it turned into an hour to get there. And it was just like, I felt horrible because here's like this New York dude getting the cliche LA traffic.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like fucking terrible.
That's a fucking Michael Bay causes those things to happen.
Oh, yeah. It was straight up.
You think Michael Bay is like low key like a terrorist, and like it's just like he's practicing in his movies. He just practices.
Yeah, that'll be in the next Michael Bay
movie. He does all the logistical planning.
Yeah, in Bad Boys 7, it'll be like, okay, we gotta have a car,
right? And it'll
hit a gas truck.
Yeah, and it'll be foreshadowing of what his plan is in real life. He's like a fucking for real.
It's like in what is it, like Loaded Gun or something, when they're like doing car chases and they're like right next to the, it's like the glass panel shop, and so there's like people walking glass panels across and they're just running through them and shit. Like, oh yeah. Anyways, what were you doing in Santa Monica?
Oh, man, just fucking, I live out there now, so.
Oh, you stay out there now?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's tight. How do you like it? The west side?
I move around a lot, man, just, but for work and shit. So now living out there is, it's cool. It's all fucking yuppies and shit.
Yeah.
You know, I'm like the only person with tattoos.
Yeah. You move around a lot. Like, where, were you born and raised in LA?
I was born in New York. I was born in Washington Heights, Manhattan.
Okay.
And then I moved here when I was 10. I came out here for like 3 months to Highland Park in like 88 just to see what it was like. And then, you know, then we moved out to like Highland Park and Glendale.
What were you folks doing in New York? Did your folks meet out in New York, or is that where they're from?
My folks met in Dominican Republic.
Oh, no shit.
So, and then they, you know, immigrated here. And
You're Dominican?
Yeah.
Oh, I thought you was Mexican, B.
you just don't have a point of reference, man.
In LA, I feel like you just assume everyone's Mexican.
No, you end up just everything becomes Mexican.
Yeah.
Everything you do.
Sometimes just to keep it funky, like when I'm talking to a girl that I think is Mexican, I'll be like, I'll ask her if maybe she's Salvadorian or Guatemalan just so I look more cultured. But then they just get offended because they're like, I'm Mexican.
Yeah. No, I don't, damn, fool. I don't have that kind of charm to fuck it up like that and then recover.
Yeah, you got to regroup.
And then you recover from it.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
And then you still get it.
If they get mad, then you got to, then you really got to turn on the charm.
Oh, man.
You know? But anyways, your folks are from the Dominican Republic.
Yeah.
When did they immigrate over to the States?
70s.
In the 70s?
Yeah.
Was that a process for them, or was it just kind of like easy?
Man, honestly, I kind of don't know, you know, the process. That's fucked up, right? But, you know, they kind of just, they don't have to, you know, it's like flying a plane and then they go through the process, you know, with the visa and everything. It's not like, it's not the same. I don't think, you know, they have, the U.S. has the same kind of,
it's probably more strict now.
Focus.
Nowadays,
huh? I mean, yeah, but, you know, it's just, I don't know. It, like, you know, it all, but yeah, that, you know, all nationalities, they kind of start going to places where they know their people are going to be. So then Washington Heights was that whole area.
It was all Dominicans?
Yeah, it became all. First, it was, you know, Jew. And then it just, Dominicans just kind of came in the 70s.
So they did the whole Ellis Island thing? Like they flew in and got legal and whatever, whatever, and then moved to Washington Heights?
That's a fucking, man, I feel like an ignorant, you're making me feel like an ignorant ass non-historical motherfucker, man.
Nah, the only reason, I just know, the only thing I know about
you don't
New York,
know your culture,
nah,
son?
Nah, the only reason I, like my great-grandparents had to do that thing, that like all the Italians, they had to come through Ellis Island and whatever, whatever, you know, fucking go see.
That's what we taught in school and shit. Yeah. I don't know if that worked out for Dominicans like that.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Show.
I don't know.
What did your folks do while they were in New York?
Shit, man. You know, first, my mom was a teenager. Yeah. So, you know, she's just going to school, right? Yeah. So she came when she was like, you know, 12.
Oh, so she came over with her folks.
Yeah, right. Yeah, yeah. So my grandmother here now, before, like, my grandmother, shit, I think she came even earlier. Like, she was just, like, working in factories.
Okay.
You know, just so factories. So, like, my grandfather, he worked, you know, making like bootleg watches and shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So he was like a watch repair maker for that, for a company.
Okay.
And then so my grandmother was in like, I don't know, in garments or something, but something factory, you know, they were working in factories.
Right.
So.
Right. So both of your folks came over when they were teens and like went to school here and shit?
Well, see, now my mom was here. My mom went back to the Dominican Republic. She met my dad.
Oh, okay.
And then my dad, you know, came with her, okay. You know, so, and, you know, yeah, so.
So they're living in New York. What did dad do when he got to the States?
Man, honestly, I don't know. And I know he's in Dominican Republic right now.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
I'm going to see him in September, but yeah. I mean, I really don't know his history so perfectly. You know?
Did your folks split up when you were young?
Yeah, yeah,
well,
yeah.
How old were you when they split?
Well, they were like, I don't know, man. I was real young.
You were young.
I was like, yeah, I was like a baby.
Yeah, yeah. So did you keep in contact with
your
dad?
Yeah, yeah. He would come in to my life, you know what I mean? And he was like there, you know, like visitation kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah. When they split, did he go right back to the Dominican?
I don't know. But he was around enough, like he was there, you know, like, I mean, he, you know. But, you know, my mom was 18, you know, she was 18 when she had me. She was going to like, you know, one of those, like, she got accepted into one of those, in LA it would be like a magnet school, you know, like one of those like Juilliard kind of schools.
Okay, yeah,
and she was, you know, for art and she's doing really good. When she had me, she, you know, didn't do that. She stopped, you know, and
just had to work.
And then just life kind of took over from there, you know, the classic example. So it was like kind of New York in the 80s kind of thing, Washington Heights in the 80s, fucking just everything, you know, you could like picture New York in the 80s to be.
Like a scary spot.
It was like all of that. It was that feeling and that excitement. I know that when I see it in movies, it feels the same way that it felt like when I was a kid. It's really weird to say that, but like even if I watch Beat Street, I still feel that shit.
Yeah.
It's really weird.
Yeah.
Like, but and then yeah, the bad, the negative stuff, real negative. Because I mean, you know, my mom got like she was victim of like two like home robberies.
Oh shit!
And then you know, so she kind of like transferred that kind of worriness to me. In New York is the kind of place, you know, every door has like several padlocks and then a steel bar kind of shit and motherfuckers crawling through the windows. Like,
right. Well, so, yeah, like similar, like I just mentioned, like Blockhead said, growing up in New York, you're very aware of your surroundings because it seems like someone's always trying to get over on you or something back then. You know what I mean? Do you remember growing up there a lot?
Yeah, I remember. I remember, for me, honestly, because my childhood was kind of fucked. It was kind of dreary for me. You know, there was nice points. I remember great, you know, cool things, but it all started for me when I came out here.
Yeah.
Because I was able to grow, but.
Can we go to some of the dreary parts?
Yeah, I don't give a fuck.
That's what I like to hear. That's what I like
crack
to hear.
Crack thighs in the streets.
I mean, I feel like you can get a lot of a sense of who someone is by, like, you know, where they come from and what happened in their experiences. And so I'm always interested in that sort of shit. So if you're willing to go there, I would love to go there. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, dad takes off and like, did you have a male role model? Was your grandfather kind of there for you?
I mean, you know, my grandmother, grandfather, you know, that was that, you know. They live right next door.
Yeah.
So
was it one of those things where since your mom's so young, they kind of almost seem like the parents?
Yeah, but then there was like some kind of like, you know, my mom wanted to, you know, she was also doing fine just kind of raising me.
Yeah.
And then working, you know, just real kind of hard working mindset kind of, you know, you gotta do it, you know.
Right.
So but you know, I just for me, and what I remember with I remember school. School was really dramatic for me because I didn't know any English, so nobody fucking, you know, nobody. Everybody, my mom was like learning English and she learned it. But the thing about it is, you know, when my mom was working, it was with my grandma, and I didn't know a fucking word of English.
Yeah. And that shit's tough, because I remember, I think kids are so fucking mean, you know what I'm saying? Like, kids are mean to people, or like to things they don't understand. And so I think a lot of people, like, when there's kids in like ESL and shit like that, when you're in elementary school, like, they're like, oh, that kid doesn't speak English, he's dumb. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah. There was that too, but, you know, I had like a, you know, I had to, like, so you get thrown into school and they leave you.
Yeah.
And then you're like, you see kids crying. I was just kind of freaking out all myself. And then it was just real overwhelming
because, yeah,
you know, it's like, you know, you, that neighborhood, you don't have to really learn English. It's its own world.
Right.
So my grandmother never fucking learned English. She, you know, rest in peace. She died only knowing Spanish.
Wow.
And so,
she stayed in New York the whole time?
Yeah, in Washington Heights. I mean, they go, you know what they do? The grandparents, they go to Dominican Republic in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. Mm-hmm. That's their thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I mean, in the winter,
oh, okay,
for a
yeah.
little bit.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
then they come back and yeah. whatever in the spring, summer,
right, right.
maybe a little fall. Anyway, so shit, you know, some snapshots, shit that I remember.
Like, you get thrown into school, you don't speak any English, but there's no like English program that they're putting you into, like,
there wasn't,
did you learn English?
There wasn't. You just fucking learn that shit little
wow.
by little,
yeah.
you know, little by little. And
yeah.
you know,
did you have any like little youngster friends that like brought you under their wing to try and teach you shit or what?
No, I remember just kind of like not understanding shit
yeah.
and just kind of like, and then, but my mom told me later that like I thought I was doing fine, you know what I mean? Like, my mom told me later that she was just like, you know, we would always have to get, you know, talk to you, you know, like the prince, you know, you would always get like reports from the teacher. They pull you aside, have meetings with us. So apparently I had like a lot of learning disabilities, and I was very kind of like outburst-ish, you know,
yeah, yeah.
like kid. And so it was like, you know, and I'm like left-handed. So, you know, I don't know if a lot of things like they, you know, I had like a like heavy dyslexia as a kid.
Yeah.
So there was language and then learning disability shit.
Oh, wow.
And so I guess, you know, really the person who my mom really, she's the reason that, you know, I kind of speak so well, I guess. You
yeah.
know what I mean? So, you know, she kind of took time.
You guys started learning English together?
You know, I know she like learned it before me, and
yeah.
then, you know, there was just me kind of like crash coursing it when I finally stepped out of the environment into school.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, but there was all Dominican kids in class, so I didn't feel like I was alone, but at the same time, it was just still difficult, man, you know.
Right.
And then the school is a weird conditioning in New York, man, like the PSs, you know, they're like, which all schools are abbreviated with a PS, which
means
public school, and then they'll put the number.
Okay.
So I forget, it was PS something fucking something,
yeah.
but there was just, you know, there was all gates and shit. This is fucking kindergarten, elementary,
yeah,
fucking gates and gates in the stairs. It looked like a fucking jail. I remember it being like a fucking jail. And then, you know, in the morning when school starts, you line up and you got people fucking yelling at you. And then there's little Dominican kids, and Dominican kids, I just, they're like, you know, they're raised real macho. And,
yeah.
And so they're like fighting each other, but like in a circle, betting on each other.
Wow.
So that was that.
At
was,
that age?
Yeah, I
that's
remember
crazy.
That. Yeah, no, I fucking clearly remember that
yeah.
shit.
And that's got to be a trip going to a school like that where it looks like a jail and it's probably more to keep like bad people out, but it almost seems like it's there to keep the good people in or something.
It's
like,
all
like,
over like, the fucking place,
you know what I mean?
Man. Yeah, it was all over the fucking place. And I just remember I never ever liked school. So
yeah.
it was always like that for me. But, you know, it is what it is. But, you know, I think nobody understood my ass anyway. I was one of those, you know.
Yeah. Were you kind of a loner?
I don't know. I think one of the things is I always felt like nobody got me anyway.
Yeah.
So like
from a young age.
From the beginning.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so like they all, you know, like you know, like fucking, you know, like my first time I remember like watching like fucking the Pee Wee Herman.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
that Pee Wee Herman movie?
Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yeah. The fucking, when I learned how, you know, I know you are, but what am I? Like,
oh,
that's
yeah.
all I fucking said. You know what I'm saying? They're like, you know, I was like, I don't know. It was like my friend was like really like TV, 80s movies and shit.
Yeah.
Like, you know, Lord knows they wouldn't let me fucking play baseball with them either. Like all the fucking kids in my neighborhood, they wouldn't let me touch a fucking baseball bat. I was just kind of like a weird introvert kind of artist. I was always drawing.
Yeah.
I was always drawing kind of shit. So, you know, I was just definitely, in my own world. You know?
At that age, were you like kind of roaming around on your own at all? Like, or was it like stay on the stoop? Like, what was
yeah,
it?
Well, it was just kind of like they were kind of like the neighborhood was so kind of shitty.
Mm-hmm.
And they were just like, you know, no, you can't, you know, go out alone kind of shit. And, you know, so what I would do a lot is, you know, me and my friends, we would play in the building. So it was like, you know, like.
Was it like a high rise?
Yeah, it was an 8-floor tenement.
Okay.
And then, you know, you just play tag or some shit, or you play baseball in the middle part with the alleyway, or, you know what I mean? Like, it was just, you know, it was just kind of like, you know, this thing, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. So.
Did you guys grow up heavy Catholic?
Yeah, it was just heavy Catholic and stuff. You know, actually, my dad and my mom, they were actually, my dad is Buddhist.
No shit.
But still, the heavy Catholic kicks in because they baptized me Buddhist.
Oh, what?
That's so, I mean, yeah. So, there's a lot of, you know, Asian influence.
Yeah, yeah. It's
there's a lot of Buddhists in, you know, Latin America. So, you know.
I didn't know that.
He kind of like baptized me Buddhist. But then, you know, it's just. You can't get away from the Catholic.
Yeah.
You know, you can't get away from the Catholicism when you're around it so much. So everything kind of becomes Catholic.
Yeah, all my family is like East Coast Italians from like the Jersey, Pennsylvania border. And so it was like they're heavy Catholic. So like some of the first words I learned were prayers. You know
guilt?
What I mean? Oh, yeah. Guilt. Yeah. That was one of the first words that affected me, I'm sure. But like, yeah, I remember like my great grandmother. What I remember of her is like her teaching me the Lord's Prayer and Our Father and all that. And I was like her little prodigy because she'd be like, oh, look what I taught Lee Eric. I taught him his prayers, you know? That's like some of my earliest language memories is like memorizing those. Those are the first raps that I memorized, maybe. But, yeah. But you guys weren't going to like church all the time?
You know, what's funny is like when my father would visit me, we would go to like Buddhist temple in, you know, in New York.
That's interesting.
Yeah. So every once in a while, I don't know what it was, you know, I think it just made it so every girlfriend I ever had was Asian.
Yeah. True.
Yeah, for real, man. Yeah, like it was just a weird, you know, Catholic enough, but Asian still.
Yeah, I feel you. You know. So what was it that made you guys migrate to LA?
Well, you know, my stepfather who, you know.
So your mom reburied?
Yeah, my mom, remarried. So my stepfather kind of brought us out here for work. I don't know what the fuck he was doing, but yeah.
How old were you when she remarried? When she
was 10? My bad. No, that was early. That was like 5.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Okay. So did you and your stepfather get along?
Well, you know, that was the messed up shit because, you know, it was like, you know, it was a rough situation with that. So my stepdad was, you know, kind of like this very charming Spaniard man from Barcelona and very intelligent, very ex-military guy from the Spanish military. And, you know, so he was a very interesting, clever, intense, charming, and eventually just overall just kind of controlling and abusive to me.
As you were describing him, I'm going, this can only go bad from here. This can only go bad.
Yeah, but yeah. The thing is the funniest of all things is like he never kind of like, he never had to hit me. He kind of had my head. He had me so well mentally that I was terrified of even crying in front of him.
Really?
Yeah.
Why? Did he like prove himself one time and then you learned your lesson or what, like what do you mean?
And I mean he kind of established that real early
and
he established like who was kind of boss early you know and so then you know little by little he kind of made you know kind of like the white man does you know
just lays the whip down so I mean was the abuse then more mental in the long run?
Because it was like all fear based and psychological fear based and you know and so you know it was kind of like
End up having kids together, your mom and stepfather?
No.
So you don't
have... Oh, my bad. Whoa. My sisters?
Yeah, okay.
I can't say I block shit out, but yeah, I got my two sisters.
So you got two younger sisters?
My two younger sisters.
But did he kind of... those were daddy's girls and you were kind of...
Well, that was later when we moved to kind of like LA, me and my sister was born in 89. My first sister, you know, is like 22 now.
Okay.
And then my other sister, you know. So basically, like, my other sister is like, you know, 19.
Yeah, so you were like a fucking young adult by the time they were born.
I got the fucking brunt of it all. And then, you know, he was like 4 years. And then after they were born, like, he was, you know, that was it.
Yeah.
You know, so I was like 14. So then I was like a fucking, basically a mess after that motherfucker.
Really?
So then I had to kind of like, I was already weird, but But the thing about it is then I became all weird and introverted and, you know, different, you know. So yeah. Shit, you know, motherfuckers put you in a bathroom, put you in a closet, put you, make you, you know, yell all the time, shake you up, make you, you know, just a lot of fear.
Yeah.
Shit. So, yeah. You know, constant shit like that.
Yeah. I mean, dude, yelling at kids can affect them the same as fucking beating them upside the head, you know?
Yeah,
it's
well.
It's all the same shit.
Yeah, it was like I don't know how to describe it, but it was, you know, it does different things.
Yeah.
So you can, you know, play around like that. I mean,
was mom aware of it? Like, did she know that you had a distaste for him? Perhaps.
I was terrified of the dude, man. I wouldn't,
so
even,
you wouldn't
say a fucking thing. I would, yeah. Like basically, like, you know, like you know, it was like a lot of, you know, I don't know, man. Like I got, like I said, like things like, you know, sleep in the bathroom,
wow.
You know, kind of like fucked up.
Wow.
So like, you know, it was just kind of always this confinement kind of like, I kind of like, you know, have this weird kind of way about me because, you know, and I got to learn my way through that shit in life. You know?
Is he still around?
No.
They divorced or like?
Yeah. They divorced. So.
How old were you when they divorced?
Probably like 14.
Yeah. I mean, were you like kind of stoked?
It was so bad that like I was, when it ended, I thought I was free, but I didn't want to say it to myself yet. You know what I mean? But I was like so happy, like so excited. I didn't want to say it to myself yet. And just in case the motherfucker would come back. Right.
You didn't want to allow yourself
I was like, probably one of the happiest moments in my entire life.
Is he any part of your life at all at this point?
Well, you know, it's like, he's a part of my sister's life, not in a way that, you know, I guess he has his own family. So, you know, they go over there, so everything is cool. You know, people, they change, you know, they fix their shit. Hopefully, if they're worth anything, they fix their shit, or they try to, and they change, or they, you know, they give some space to the people that they did damage to, because, you know. So, you know, I guess that's cool, but, you know, I'm not.
It's not like your best friend at this point.
No, I'm not into that.
So you move out here when you're 10, and what part of town do you guys move to?
Well, we end up moving. So, you know, there's Highland Park, and we end up moving to Glendale.
Oh, okay.
So
like right out here. Where we're
right out here. Yeah. So, you know, it was just kind of like Glendale in the 90s. And, you know, it was just like.
So everyone just thought you were Armenian.
For real. They did.
Yeah.
You know, Armenians think I'm Armenian.
Yeah,
so.
For sure. Armenians think I'm Armenian, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's that, you know, and just, or Mexican.
Yeah.
You know. But it's either or, you know.
So you're going to school out in Glendale when you got here?
Yeah.
And you're what, fourth grade, fifth grade?
Right. So it's elementary school, junior high, high school.
When you're that age, since English is a second language, did you have like a heavy Spanish accent or anything?
Well, no. By the time I came, by the time I was like eight, you know, I knew.
You're good.
English.
Yeah.
I mean, I was fine.
Yeah.
You know, definitely by like seven, you know what I mean?
But you still speak Spanish too?
Yeah, I speak Spanish.
Nice.
Yeah. You know,
that's got to be useful in LA.
Yeah. You know what though? But like, I tell you two things. One, I came here with a New York accent. So there was that. There's like, what the fuck, you know? And then the Spanish, when Dominicans talk, yeah, it's Spanish, but it's a totally different accent.
It's a different dialect or something.
I'll talk to like a Mexican.
Yeah.
And
they won't
respond back in English.
Oh, really?
They're like, it's not like, I don't know if it's acceptable or nobody ever says anything. Like, I've never heard anybody say anything, but then, you know, then I get a lot of responses in Spanish.
Yeah.
So it was just an accent thing.
That's like,
nothing too crazy, nothing dramatic,
right.
You can make a movie out of.
That makes sense.
Oh, that Spanish that, you know, that gets discriminated against.
Right. That's funny. I mean, what was school like out here?
It was a shit, man. Well, because
what was the difference?
The difference is it wasn't a fucking jail.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't some fucking institution, or it didn't feel like it because it was open. You know, there's like sunlight and shit. You know, there's sunlight.
Yeah. Like sociologically, what was Glendale like back in the early 90s? Like, what was the, was it a good part of town?
It was supposed to be. It wasn't a horrible part of town. It was incredible compared to New York. Mm-hmm. It was incredible compared to Washington Heights. Mm-hmm. It was, all that shit was good. But like, you know, there was still like, it was the 90s. So there was like, West Side Gang in Glendale, like kind of beefing with TBR, which is like the big gang in like Glendale and Atwater kind of thing.
Yeah.
And there was like, there was drive-bys. There was people hanging out. There was anywhere you went in LA in the 90s, it would just be people kind of posted up and other people driving by. They raise their hands and then they shoot or a party. I like two of my girlfriends have gotten like have seen somebody get shot or have almost died from a bullet grazing like at a party. So you meet anybody from here to fucking the IE or a certain part of Orange County where they went to a party in the 90s, they almost got shot or they heard about somebody getting shot or they heard a gunshot.
No shit.
Just because I didn't know it was just so
prevalent.
Crazy, yeah, that people, you know, so, I mean, there was stabbings in school. There was, like, Armenians versus the Mexicans. It was, like, but literally, that shit was everywhere.
Yeah.
You know?
Where did you fit into all that?
Man, I'll tell you right now, so by the time high school hit, I was rapping.
Uh-huh.
I was definitely rapping. It was, like, you know, ninth grade, I was in it, you know, so I'd be taking the bus. I was the only motherfucker that didn't care about taking the bus because, like, I was like, well, my mom was like, why, you know, public transportation, still like New York mindset a little bit.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I take the bus out, you know, first I started rapping at Poisonous Records in Hollywood. Uh-huh. And then, so I had like a double life. So I'd go rap somewhere at night, go to the open mic, and then, you know, and then go to school the next day. So that was my thing, you know, so that was my thing. And the other thing I was doing is, I was into heavy graphic arts, so I was, you know, going to, like, go to school and build a portfolio for that shit. And, you know, I just was, like, using school to get through school and, you know, and move on. I wasn't really involved.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
I never did prom. I never did none of that shit because I was just like, fuck all this shit.
Yeah. You know? But you were able to avoid all the gang shit?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, like, that's the thing about, you know, once you're in an area like that, like, you can get enough space to avoid it. You know what I mean? Like, you don't have to. You're not in it so bad. I think a lot of areas, that's honestly a decision.
Yeah.
You know, unless you got your family or some shit, you know. Either way, it's still, for a lot of people that even their families are, like, some kind of somebody's like their dad's a shot caller and they're like, they want to go the other way in life. They fucking can. In fact, it's welcomed by the dad.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's not like some dad, you know, did hard time, comes out of jail and says, well, I want my kid to do this. No, they want their kids to go the other way.
Do
so
better.
Most people, you know what I mean? My mom, you know, coming from such a bad neighborhood, my mom was like, you know, please just graduate high school.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like, you know what I mean? Like, do this, you know, they were just like, please, you know. So my mindset was honestly that. Because, I mean, because I left somewhere that to me was dreary and I came somewhere nice. And I says, fuck it. Like, let me make something out of my life. That was in me since I was a kid.
Right.
So
by the time you're speaking English in class and everything like that, like, do they pick up like on the fact that, oh, like, he's dyslexic, like, but we can treat that? Because I know now you're a big reader. So, like, when did all that shit start making sense to you, reading and fucking?
I mean, you know, I'm not like a big reader, you know, but like, I can say that, you know, people ask me if I've been to college. People ask me, do you have a degree? Like, you speak so well. And, you know, honestly, that's my mom. My mom really sat with me with a dictionary and with school and just did that with me.
Yeah.
My mom's actually not very good at math, and I'm actually not good at math.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So so it was kind of like right brain kind of shit versus the left brain stuff that I was really weak on. So, you know, they put you in a resource, what they call a resource specialist program or special ed, whatever name they put it. And so I was in special ed all throughout up until like senior year.
Oh, no shit.
So, you know, but you go through getting made fun of with shit like that, you know, you go through like, and then high school for me was, junior high was the roughest because I was definitely still poor.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't always be able to afford the clothes that, you know, other people could afford. So I remember one time some dude, he called me G.I. Joe because I had like fake Carl Canais on and they were all green.
Yeah.
And I just socked them. So that was life, you know, that's everybody.
That's an interesting thing that you brought up because, like, you're known to be a bit of a ruffian. Like, I don't know if I've ever seen it, but I've heard on more than one occasion of rhetoric knock somebody out. So, like, when does that go all the way back to Washington Heights and people betting on each other? Like, were you ever part of those fights in a circle?
No, I didn't really get into a fist fight till I got out here.
Mm-hmm.
And No, it's just having a lot of anger anyway. Mm-hmm. And then like nobody really kind of, I carry that anger on my shoulders. I carry that for a long time as a kid. Mm-hmm. And then I just kind of kept my space. So I never kind of got mixed up with people. You know what I mean? I was kind of always on my own kind of path. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? I've mm-hmm. been Lone Ranger forever. Mm-hmm. But I definitely snapped at people. You know, mm-hmm. I did, you know, I like chased kids with bats and shit. Yeah. Like I snapped a lot of times. When I snapped and, you know, and then that's because what it is you hold a lot of anger from what you felt you could have done something when you were, you know, 4 feet tall to an adult who was punking you like he was his size. So you hold that for the day that somebody fucks with you.
I was going to say, like, I feel like as an adult, when you're a fighter, it's like you're never really fighting the person that you're punching. It's like you're fighting that vision of whatever it is you hate in your head, whether it be your dad or your stepdad or whatever. Like, it's mm-hmm. always kind of part of it always is like you're snapping on that. Like, yeah. is there any truth to that?
Sure. Yeah, there's that. You can carry that anger. Mm-hmm. You can, you know, carry all kinds of weird, you know, sociopathic approaches to it, you know, where you fucking mm-hmm. you freak out or you go berserk or not. I mean, honestly, I've never really gone berserk. I'm different in the sense that I kind of had to always keep my emotions perfectly in check around, you know, my dad. Mm-hmm. So I still appear a certain way, but I'm really furious. Mm-hmm. And then I freak out or I do something to the person and, mm-hmm. you know, methodically or get mm-hmm. mad. Mm-hmm. And then so there's stupid shit, but, you know, you can break it down all day. But, you know, I don't know, man.
Point is, sometimes you just got to sock a motherfucker.
You just, you know, when someone's disrespecting you, you know, yeah. If it's too much, then, you know, it happens. You know, there's a time and a place and motherfucker comes out of pocket and, yeah. and maybe you do
what
something.
Was the, you remember the first fist fight you got into?
I remember the first time I officially lost a fight.
Yeah. What was
that? That was the first, like, usually it's like something like this dude's talking shit. And you're after class, let's go. And then, yeah. and then the dude just like socked me in the sternum and I knocked my wind out.
Yeah.
And then, you know, there's another time it was like somebody was talking shit. We see each other after class and then homie rushes me and then like takes me down. And then, you know, it's just like that. And so after like kind of quickly losing a couple fights, then like I learned the tricks was used on me on other people. And
right.
Then, and then it kind of kept going and kept going and kept going. And then, like, there was a lot of peace and nonviolence. And then, you know, later on in my adulthood, I got, like, jumped by, like, security staff at Safari Sam's. Mm. And then it clicked and all came back. And then I was just like, next person who fucks with me is going to get it. Mm-hmm. So it's like that. So it's just like, you know, you kind of like, you know, I'm not one who intends to be a certain way. I just, you know, you just kind of try to navigate your own mental shit.
Yeah, yeah.
But then the other weird part is I found to be kind of good at it for myself. And it's something that I actually...
Yeah, you seem like you got heavy hands.
It's just an appreciation of it. It's like artists can sometimes just be artists or sometimes be kind of like artist pugilist, like artist, poet, warrior kind of thing. So I see that a lot. And I see a lot of artists that are like that, and I think it's just part of it's something that it's its own category of person, and but it's a real thing. It's like there's mechanics, there's engineers, but there's also just warrior poets out there. So there's that. So it's not like it's a part of, you know. I'll tell you a weird thing. I've never been coordinated in sports.
Yeah,
but when I did boxing. When I fucked around and maybe did martial arts or something, like it really fit. It really worked out. It made sense. Yeah. It was, you know, you like something when you know all the names of somebody or some shit like that. Yeah. And, you know.
So did you grow up watching boxing and stuff like that?
Then you grew up watching fucking, you know, Mike Tyson, Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Oh, yeah.
You grew up watching fucking Chuck Norris and Bruce Lee and shit. And, you know, like No Retreat, No Surrender.
Yeah, dude.
Like,
our childhood was like the fucking prime center for action star. Like, dude, when we were kids, it's like karate movies were the shit.
Fuck yeah.
Like, you know what I'm saying? Fucking American Ninja and shit like that. Like, that's
American
what I grew up on.
American Ninja? Like, oh, my
no
God.
No retreat, no surrender.
No retreat, no surrender. Fucking like, blood sport.
That's what we were. When we were kids, I feel like we grew up karate fighting each other. You know what I mean? And, yeah. Like, you know, kids are sissies nowadays. Like, it's like you're not allowed to fucking play wrestle and shit or whatever. But, like, I grew up in a culture of honor as well where it's like I come from a place where, like, yeah, if you fucking look at someone's girlfriend the wrong way at the bar, they're probably going to beat you up afterwards. You know what I mean? And so it was, like, definitely, like, trying not to fucking cause dust in there because, admittedly, I'm not a fighter, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's still like playing as a child was roughhousing. Like, that's what we did. We roughhoused. Yeah. We fucking threw rocks at each other. We fucked each other up pretty much. Like, and I feel like that's like a lost thing nowadays.
Yeah, no, I feel you. I feel I remember nasty injuries from rocks and shit. And,
And terrible.
Retarded.
I mean, we were stupid. Shit. We would have BB fights. Like, we would put on fucking Carhartts and like shoot BBs at each other. Like,
I have a tiny little dent from somebody slingshotting me.
Whew. Yeah, slingshots are no fun. Those are fucking, that's only a bad thing that can come from slingshots.
And I got a body shot from a wrist rocket. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so like, it's, you know, it ain't, you know, people were just fucking kids were just different time, I guess.
Absolutely. Tell me about the double life that started with the rapping. Like, what age were you when you discovered rap is for you? And did you have any, like, preferred music before that?
You know, I say this because I don't know how or why, but like, my first music where I consciously said to myself, like, my stepdad, I give it up to him. He had good taste in music.
Yeah.
He's like, bumping, he was like, I think he's like a DJ in Spain. Uh-huh. So like, homie was always, he always had like playing something good, you know what I mean? Like, so always something good, you know. But where he didn't go into was, you know, the stuff, the angry stuff that came out in the 90s. So it was like Suicidal, you know, like Nine Inch Nails, Pantera, and that shit just was on MTV, so I like that shit, you know. That's when I first like got into music that I could like grab as my own. So I did. I mean, I still like that shit. It wasn't shit that I just liked as a child. Like, I would go listen to Pretty Hate Machine or, you know, fucking Suicidal's fucking Art of Rebellion or their first album, you know, or like whatever the fuck. Right. So like, it was like definitely like a, you know, that just thrashy fucking or just, you know, Nine Inch Nails, whatever. So that was that. And then what got me to answer your question, what got me into hip-hop, it had to be something dark and aggressive and cool. And then just at the time, man, it's all like Das Effects.
Yeah.
They want effects. And like, it really was like, well, this shit is dark. And I heard the bass line. I was like, yo, you know. And that's what really, really got me into hip-hop. Now,
which is funny because like, you also came up in the Bloat and like, they were very anti-Das Effects, weren't they? They're like, no stiggity diggities on fucking stage or something.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, but this was before even I rapped.
Before you knew about that,
I rapped, you know, before there was any of that. Yeah. You know, it was still very, you know, so... You know,
so Das Effects got pulled you into the rap world.
It was like probably like, you know, other than like, I think just, you know, I think you could always appreciate. I remember like, you know, like Friends by Houdini. There was like Friends by Houdini. I remember that in the 80s. I remember really liking that song. I remember like B Street Breakdown by Melly Mel being that in the back of my head. But where I said I consciously like it, it was Das Effects.
Yeah.
But yeah. And then, you know, that became the way everybody rapped. So it became something. LA was like, fuck that shit.
Right.
And we're like, fuck the miggity, miggity, miggity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, so that was the thing.
They're like, we got a style with no nonsensical fucking
crutches. They said there were going to be no nonsense about it. You know, and LA was real no nonsense at the time. They were just really, really, really like, it was a real tough crowd, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
So, but that's later. So that getting into rapping, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, basically like, so you get into Das Effects and then when you decide like, oh, I'm going to pick up a pen.
Well, I know. So that way after that, where I decided to pick up a pen to see my boy Chris, who was also like an artist, you know, who's like also kind of like my mentor. He was like the older homie.
Yeah.
You know, he was just incredible, incredible artist. And so he was just kind of my mentor. And then, you know, he was just into hip hop. So by then it was just like really, really like, you know, like Organized Confusion.
Is he like a few years older than you?
Yeah. Yeah. He's like 4 years old.
Yeah. How do you meet him?
I met him through his brother. His brother would bring his artwork in junior high, and he was like, whoa, this is just, you know, I finally got to meet Chris. You know, Chris was in high school at the time, you know? And so, you know, and they were like into Organized Confusion and all that stuff. And by then, you know, there was just really right there. It was like 93, 94 where shit got really crazy, you know? So with, you know, that Dante Ross, all the good stuff, you know, in the 90s, that was like, where we could hold on to it came out. So yeah. That's really when it kind of started kicking in. By 95 is really when I started rapping.
Yeah. Side note real quick, because I always love people that grew up in LA. I like to ask them, like, what was it like during the riots for you?
Well, I got to see the fire, you know, from where I was living, you know, I mean, like, it was just kind of like a hectic feeling, you know, it was definitely like a hectic, crazy feeling, you know what I mean? Like, I wasn't down there.
I wasn't down there.
Yeah. You know, I wasn't like in the fucking, I wasn't
mix
in South
it, obviously. But as a fucking young kid around that time, like, could you guys feel the effects?
There was like marches and riots kind of like in school.
Mm.
I don't know. They just kind of, everybody now started picking up this kind of feeling of you got to freak out.
Yeah.
And then they kind of never lost it. And now you just get Laker games with fucking riots.
Yeah.
But sports are famous for having stupid riots. Absolutely. I just think that people were like, they started like learning that. So, but then what happened was is police became more police state-like and they started, you know, putting pressure on people in general.
I feel like that was just right at this perfect time. You were in your formative youth years where it was like, did that help a rebellious spark in you as well? Did you kind of see and understand what was going on and be like, and also being on some like, man, fuck the police type of shit? You know what I mean? Like when that kind of shit happens right when you're at that age, it's like.
No kid needs like that much, you know, motivation to say, man, I really don't like this. I don't think anybody really, really goes and says, you know, thank you, may I have another, when they're being controlled in some way, when they're just, you know, when they're, you know, supposed to be free, but then somebody can come on the street and tell them, hey, you know, what are you doing with that? You know, and so nobody likes that shit.
Yeah.
Nobody likes, some people will express it less than others, but like, you know, like definitely in hip hop, when you're into hip hop, you're like, you definitely have that attitude.
Mm.
You know, you're listening to KRS-One or something like that.
Yeah.
You're definitely like, yeah, I knew it all along. You know, you don't go and say KRS-One was right.
Right.
But you're definitely like, it's in there. It's in your it's in the conscience and in the conscious and collective conscience.
Yeah. Yeah. So Chris takes you under his wing and you start rapping.
Yeah. Cause he started, you know, rapping.
Yeah.
So, you know.
Did he ever get anywhere with it?
No, we'll see. That's a tragic story because, you know, he kind of like something happened to him psychologically where he kind of didn't come back from it and he kind of stayed where he was at and became, you know, his life completely changed. He just was no longer the same. His sanity left him.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of like, it was a weird thing. It was kind of like, now it's just me.
What was that like to watch that happening?
It was fucked up.
Yeah. What was it, like schizophrenia or something?
I think he did some bad acid or something and then just in a bad environment. And then, you know, he got stuck wherever that was. And it messed up because he got an internship with Wildstorm Studios, which is Image Comics.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was like, he like made it for all of us, you know, and he kind of came from an abusive childhood.
Yeah.
So, you know, he came back from San Diego and then there was like this different person. And this guy was like my big brother.
Mm.
You know, it was like, it was weird because we lost touch. He wouldn't call for a while. And then all of a sudden he comes back and you're like, what's going on? And then you kind of find out the hard way. I didn't get a heads up from his mom. I didn't get a heads up from anybody. I don't know if they were embarrassed or didn't get it fully yet. But then, you know, little by little. So, you know, and eventually it just got so bad that he was out on the street and kind of shit. And I would see him on the street. I'd be at a bus stop and he'd be there and I'd be like, what the fuck? So there was all this, you know, but that was fucked up. Yes.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, that's another thing that really kind of like pushed me forward into it as well.
Because
like,
were you guys experimenting with drugs together at that time?
No, just him.
Yeah. Just by himself.
Just him. Yeah. So
have you ever been big into drugs? I don't think so.
I mean, no, you know, you enjoy what you enjoy, but you know what I mean? Like everybody's different body chemistry wise. So certain things affect people, other people don't. Like it doesn't, like, I don't get a crazy feeling when I smoke weed. So I can't, I mean, it's
not into it.
It's not a big fucking deal for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's like alcohol is cool, you know, and I'm probably, if I did some meth or coke, I'd probably love it. So I don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm too. Everybody's got a different body chemistry. Yeah. So, you know, I'm one of those people, you know.
Yeah You got to stay away from the things that you would like too much,
Or else I'll just be a tweaker or
something.
Exactly. Be a crackhead, you know what I'm saying?
I feel you, man. When do you start taking buses to go rap places?
95, 96, you know, 96.
What was the scene
really
like back then?
It's crazy.
Because that's like, even that seems to me like to even predate like the quote unquote underground that we know today, you know what I mean? Like it had to be mega underground back then.
Well, it was definitely exciting. It was definitely, you had to know how to rap, and you had to, you know, you grab the mic and, or get it snatched away from you, and you really say something interesting.
And what places were you going?
Poisonous Records.
What is that?
That was like this fucking, I actually just found clips of me on YouTube. And it was just like this old, it was this record store that would have an open mic in Hollywood.
Uh-huh.
So it was like people from Good Life and Big Al would go down there, and just like when he wanted to get, you know, his practice in and didn't want to, you know, Good Life wasn't happening, he'd go up there, and he was one of the people. And
who else would you run into?
Man, I don't, man, there was this incredible dude, like, and only like me, Merce, and Will I Am know who he is, like out of the old school people. Yeah. And like this guy named, his name was Ken Dog, and then he named himself Cerebral. And he was just like, before anybody ever heard of Eminem, he was incredible like that. He was this dude who was just incredible at freestyling, incredible at writing. And he was just like this like real like chubby, like half white, half Mexican dude. He was like shaped like Eric. He looked like Eric from Cartman, from South Park. Yeah. He looked like Cartman from South Park. He kind of looked like Sam Kinison. He was a real funny, crazy person.
Yeah.
And homie was like the most incredible rapper I ever heard. And what got me to freestyle was Supernatural. But then I heard this guy and I was like, whoa, this dude was like, he blew Saphir and Casual and everybody away.
Really?
He was incredible. He was beyond just incredible.
And then what? He just disappears?
He's like he's like a Bobby Fischer. He ends up just kind of disappearing later on, like maybe 2 years later.
Oh, shit.
He ended up going to jail for distribution, and then he comes back, and then he just kind of disappears. And then like I see him in Ladera Heights one day with like his wife and kids, and he surfs. He was just a sociopathic, crazy motherfucker. He is so incredible, because I think part of the reason he was so good at what he did was he was like a pathological liar.
Mm.
So he would just lie to say shit, and he was elaborate at it.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It was like an crazy dude. And And if he like would sell crack and like and do all this crazy shit and then but just be like this underground rapper, but then be this crazy. It was a crazy person.
Yeah.
You could make a movie about him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
but he was kind of a Bobby Fischer. Yeah. Whoever heard him knows who I'm talking about.
So you used to run into Merce and Will I Am back then too.
That was now. So then after Poisonous Records, I go to this thing called Foundation Funk Collective. And the Foundation Funk Collective.
Where was that at?
When I went to it, it was at across from the old Glam Slam at like this kind of shelter in downtown. And this place was
downtown was like a shithole back then.
It was a shithole up until 2001, 2003 maybe.
Yeah. So like it was like shady to go downtown.
Yeah, it was shady. If you wanted to cop or whatever, there's just nothing there. There's just nothing. It was a ghost town. It was like just an army of homeless people and crackheads.
Mm-hmm.
So, but, you know, you go down there to rap, and it was cool. It was like, it's just these really like, it was all kinds of, the scene in LA was like, there was just like 30 rappers from Pasadena that were fucking incredible at rapping and freestyling. And then like fools from LA, and you know what I'm saying? Like first time I met Merce, my boy Quasi introduced me to him. There's this crew called Lost Kids, and they don't even rap anymore and shit. Mm-hmm. Well, actually FaZe still raps. Shouts out to FaZe Rock. But like, you know, he introduced me to his kid Merce, and we were like the same age, and you know, like he was always competitive dude, you know? You know, and then, yeah, and Unity was happening around that time and all that shit. So the scene was very, it had a dangerous feeling because the gang activity was always kind of surrounding it. You know, especially if you go down to Good Life, especially if you go down to Project Blowed. And there was a point where Good Life and Project Blowed was going on at the same time. So you go to the Good Life and then you go to Project Blowed. And it was just always something to prove, especially if you weren't black. If you weren't black, I mean, white was probably the worst thing to be. I mean, but if you just weren't black or you didn't look black, me, I don't look a certain way. So it was just as tough.
Yeah.
You know, you definitely had to prove yourself.
Yeah, slow down a sec. The places that you're going, like the spot downtown, like what was the format like? Like what would happen at those places?
The format wasn't anything special. It wasn't like Project Blowed where they boo you. They, you know, they let you rap and then, but you know, eventually somebody grabbed the mic.
It's just an open mic.
It was an open mic.
And was it mainly people freestyling, or were you out there like putting on beats that you wanted to rap to and doing songs?
Foundation was definitely, so there was this thing going on in LA. There was people, there was people breakdancing, but there was people grooving. So there would be these circles of people grooving. It's something that doesn't even happen
anymore.
What's grooving? Grooving is this thing where you go in and you do like as a it's a very kind of like, think like Drunken Master, kind of like freestyle. You stumble and you make up the moves as you go along. It's very improvisational.
Mm-hmm.
And motherfuckers were grooving. So they would always be like grooving circles no matter where you'd go. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, fools like rapping and shit. Mm-hmm. You know, and yeah, and there would be people breakdancing.
What kind of beats are they playing? Like break beats or just like 12-inch singles that are out at the time?
Everything, or? You know, everything from fucking, you know, just fucking Mobb Deep, you know, like the all, you know, all like the good 90s shit from the East Coast. Like, I did remember rapping to a WC in the Mad Circle beat a lot. I forget the name of that shit. But, yeah. You know, like, they would, yeah, definitely be playing, like, you know, like, West Coast shit. You know, I don't think they would be playing any Snoop or like Tupac or anything like that back then, just because back then to everybody that was the mainstream. That was the mainstream.
Yeah.
Tupac was the mainstream. Bone was the mainstream. Right. So that they would be like no, whatever they felt on that. So they would be bumping anything they felt was underground, or, you know what I mean, underground was really underground back then, you know what I mean. So there was just that. There was, you know, motherfuckers be lighting a lot of incense and wearing a lot of fucking body oils and smoking a lot of fucking BDs and clothes and shit. Yeah. And, you know, so there was that.
What were you dressing like at that time? What was the style?
I mean, I wore kind of like, I wore camouflage. I wore like a, you know, like a faded green jacket and shit.
Did you have a backpack?
I think I did have a backpack.
Okay, but yeah, you had to have a backpack.
You know, I always had trouble with my hair, man, because I put a hairnet on just to keep my hair in line. So I'd have my hair slicked back.
What's wrong with your hair?
My hair is just super coarse, man. Yeah. So like,
it stands up straight.
It stands up straight, crazy cowlicks. It's real, you know, curly.
So you were wearing a hairnet?
I'd wear a hairnet just to like slick it back.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I never not had, like, consciously or unconsciously, I think everybody like would just wear their Dickies or like fucking Cortezes.
Yeah.
Or,
yeah.
Like, just, I was just there. It was something you dressed
at the same time, wearing a hairnet and like being, like you said, one of the dudes at the spots that's not black.
Yeah.
Was it part of like, was it almost subconsciously, I'm going to be extra Chicano and fucking wear a hairnet?
No, no, it's not nothing I really thought about. Yeah. It's just, how the fuck else was I going to keep my hair down?
But was that ever a thing where people were like, oh yeah, Rhetoric, he's the Chicano rapper?
No, nobody, especially back then, nobody wanted that.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted anything to do with that. Was the other thing that nobody wanted anything to fucking do with in underground rap, in underground hip hop, in the scene in LA for sure. Nobody wanted anything to do with that. If you came in there rapping like that, then you would have gotten booed so fucking quick.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Like what? Like rapping in Spanish and shit?
No, rapping like fucking, like, you know how like Chicano rap, like, yeah, like you sound like some, like, you sounded like, if you sounded
you're
like
so cool, I'm gonna call you a culo,
right? If you did anything like Kid Frost, anything that sounded like anything was on the radio, whether it was Chicano or whatever,
yeah,
they would, you know, no, it wouldn't have been accepted, because it was at the time, again, it was mainstream.
Yeah.
And that's just, it was a very anti-mainstream mentality, honestly. Yeah. It was like people made their career talking about underground.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Even up until 1999, you had like Sunspot Jones and like, you know, the Living Legends, like talking about like four track, you know, underground, you know, for life kind of thing. Like everybody, you know, because already, so now also you have rappers getting rejected by the mainstream. You had like AC Alone getting dropped by Capitol.
Uh-huh.
You know, so you had like always, there was always like a us versus them weird mentality. So, you know, and then there was this resentment already, you know, because in your own underground head, you're like, that shit is like, represents all the fucking shitheads to me in my life.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? So like, that's how it felt in the 90s for us. I, you know, I'm definitely like, that's the reality of it.
Yeah.
You know, for a lot of people, you know what I mean? And if it was going to be something from the West Coast, it was going to be our fucking thing.
Yeah.
It was going to be our thing that sounded like our thing, you know?
Yeah.
So
like when Pistol Grip Pump hit on the radio, like, were you around that, or like, was that, were you a part of that scene already?
No, I wasn't part of that scene. I wasn't part of the Good Life. I rapped at the Good Life.
Yeah.
I got to rap like one time at the Good Life. That shit was packed.
Yeah,
I got to rap at the Good Life.
How did it go?
It was cool.
Yeah,
it was cool. I didn't get booed.
Nice.
It was cool. Yeah, perfect. Right, for real.
Yeah.
I didn't get booed, but you know, I mean, I got to rap a Project Blowed early on, and, you know.
Yeah, when does the transition go from, you know, Poisonous Records to Foundation to where you're starting to, like, hear about Good Life and Project Blowed? Or did those already have, like, kind of a – did those already have a big name for themselves? Were they kind of legendary at that point?
Well, at the time.
Yeah.
Now, Good Life Subsides and his Project Blowed and Foundation.
Yeah.
And Foundation was lesser known, but there would be kind of like battles between the two. So there was just these undocumented battles where, like, it was just be like somebody from, you know, would like be like a back and forth.
And were you more known as a Foundation rapper than a Project Blowed rapper at the time?
It wasn't like that for me. It was just kind of like I was rapping at wherever I was rapping.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right,
like,
right.
But like, it was definitely, I was watching it happen. You know what I'm saying? So it was like, my boy Cerebral versus Kinky Red, or like, it was like the Rhyme Stalkers versus like 2000 Crows.
Uh-huh.
You feel me? It's like, so 2000 Crows was still, you know, affiliated with Project Blowed at the time, or that area, or coming from that area.
Yeah.
You know, so you have people from, you know, you have people from Northeast LA and Hollywood versus people from South Central. Basically, that's what it was. And then nobody thought of it that way. But, you know, if you look at where they were both coming from.
Right, that's what it was.
So there was like, you know, and there was just like, you know, Project Blowed had a very kind of like, you know, you were, you know, you had to qualify and this and that. And then some people they were resentful to that.
Mm.
You know what I mean? And they were like, no, fuck that. So y'all, and then, you know, some people had the attitude, it was like, oh, all you guys do is style. So one of the things that were always being said was, you know, oh yeah, all those guys do is they style and they rap like, oh, and they make fun of them. And then the Project Blow dudes would be like making fun of like fools, like, oh, y'all rap like East Coast. Like, you know, like shit. So it was like always like this interesting tension. But either way, motherfuckers could really fucking freestyle and could really fucking rap. And half of them aren't even around anymore. And half of the, like I said, like that fool Cerebral who, like, you know, even like Will I Am knows who he is. You know, that he's not around anymore. He's like a Bobby Fischer. And by the way, Will I Am was like this incredible.
Just, yeah, where would you see him at? Foundation?
He would be at Foundation.
Yeah.
You know, and per se, like I said, he wasn't like, oh, I'm a Foundation, you know, rapper.
Yeah.
But, you know, yeah, I mean.
He was just there.
He was there. Actually, I think Black Eyed Peas played their first show there as Black Eyed Peas, and like not as Atband Clan, Black Eyed Peas.
Really?
Yeah.
Were you there?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was there.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah.
It's still a trip to me to have seen Black Eyed Peas get as crazy huge as they are, because, like, I remember seeing them at the Glass House in, like, 2001, and, like, 200 people were there, you know what I'm saying? Like, and they're breakdancing on stage and shit.
Yeah, well, those guys were incredible dancers, but, you know, you always got to remember is Will was at Band Clan, and they were on Eazy-E's Ruthless label.
Yeah, he got taken under the wing of Jerry Heller, right?
Well, I wouldn't say that. It's just they were a talent. They were on Ruthless Records.
Yeah,
like before Bone, they were on Ruthless Records.
Uh-huh.
You know, but Will I Am was this just incredibly talented just dancer and rapper and producer. So he was just all over the place.
Could you already just tell even back then?
No, like everybody could tell.
Yeah.
But there was another thing is like his happy ass was so good at freestyling. It's like sometimes, you know, when everybody was all like, yeah, rah, 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 you know, he would come in there and kill it.
Really?
You know what I mean? Like killing just incredible freestyles. And there was one time I was like, I heard a story about him going down to Project Blowed and battling like 2000 Crows and like battling like 10 dudes and like taking them out. And it's not something that I would be surprised to hear, because Will was an incredible freestyle, incredible rapper.
Really?
You know, it's just he had a pop sensibility and he chose to do what he did.
Well, a lot of people, I feel like you would agree with this, a lot of people that can freestyle really well, sometimes that doesn't cross over into writing songs. So it's a rare talent when somebody can write songs, particularly with a pop sensibility, and be able to freestyle.
He is just one of those people that could do anything.
He was a fucking savant.
You know, but yeah, he just knew how to do what he did.
Yeah.
You know? And like, you know, you may like what he does or you may not, but you know, I know the talent, you know, inside out pretty much from what I've seen. And that dude can really do anything.
Yeah, I like what he does because I like getting money, you know. And that's what he does, gets that.
No,
I'm just
kidding. but homie could really rip it. Really,
I mean,
rip
did
it.
You, and at that point, was he making beats and stuff? Like, did you already know he was like, could make dope music and shit too?
Well, yeah, I mean, he was actually in his own way. He was definitely pushing the envelope, because before anybody in hip hop was really into it, he was fucking around with like bossa nova rhythms and stuff. And this was before anybody was really into that shit. And he was fucking around with those kinds of time signatures on his own. So he was quite a visionary they think what they think, but you know, the truth is the truth. He's an incredibly talented person.
Yeah.
I recorded my first track on a DAT down the street. That used to be the old Black Eyed Peas studios, like right down the street from here.
No shit.
Yeah.
That's crazy. When do you make the jump? Like when I met you, you were introduced to me as a Bloedian. Like, it's like, this is rhetoric. He's a Bloedian. Like, when did that become a thing?
The you know, it's funny that people considered me from Project Bloed, but, you know, I guess the powers that be did not really consider me Project Bloed. I've never been on a, you know, show. I never, you know what I mean? I never kind of like worked that hard to be in it. And therefore, some people work hard and they stick around and then they get accepted or they don't. And I was never one of those people. You know, I rapped all over the place where I give a fuck about rapping, you know, so I'd be at Elements. I'd be wherever the fuck. So I never kind of did that. I never put in that work. And, you know, but, you know, I was definitely always accepted and respected by Mike and I and, you know, by AC. You know, they always gave me love. So I gave respect to the people that were the foundation of that creativity, but not the frat, you know. So, but sometimes people would consider me that, you know, Project Bloed. But I never considered myself Project Bloed. If it was a flyer, motherfuckers would throw it on there. But you know what I mean? Like, but, you know, like I said, if you're going to be Project Bloed, then put me on a show, put me this, put me that. But, you know, it's like it works a certain way.
Okay.
And then that's all, you know, it's all subjective, you know what I'm saying? But, yeah, I mean, you know, but never really, yeah. But I was introduced to you like that, but really I was never officially that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. Learn something new every day.
Yeah.
Yeah. I also think you were introduced to me as kind of a live wire, too. Were you a live wire back then? Unpredictable?
I don't know, man. I think people just kind of thought of me as a loose cannon, man.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know, man. I just think I just say whatever the fuck was on my mind. You know, I was kind of like, I don't know. I had like a punk rock weird way about me. I used to be like, you know, fuck that, fuck this, fuck that kind of way of being, I guess, you know. I had an attitude because, you know, I kind of seen now three waves of trends come in and out of LA. So once you kind of see like a new wave and a new wave after a new wave, you're just kind of like, you kind of develop a chip on your shoulder and attitude.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So, and Livewire, I don't know, just kind of like abrasive dude. Mm. You know what I'm saying? Kind of an abrasive dude, I guess, maybe. You know what I'm saying? Kind of like a, you know.
Right. So. And what was the first project that you released?
The first project was Machine Gun Cough.
What year was that?
That was 03.
03.
Yeah.
Yeah. And is it still around? Can you find it places?
I think there's some fucking Spaniard bootlegging my shit, man.
Yeah.
I looked on there. There's some Spaniard bootlegging my shit. I'll re-release it. And, you know, Bandcamp. I got it up on Bandcamp.
Yeah. What other projects have you released? Let's talk about some of the music you put out.
Okay. The music I put out. Music, this is like, I had like a 7-inch before that. It was put out under Sublevel Epidemic. And it was like I was like the B side of that. I was on the B side, and it was like Anti-MC did the B, and it was a track called Cruise Control. And the A side was like Radioactive.
Mm-hmm.
So that was like the first, probably like official release. There was this weird CD called Full Blown before that, that I had a verse on a group project of all these rappers that decided not to name themselves. But the rest of the compilation had like Slugs, early shit, Aesop Rocks, early shit, all these motherfuckers, really early shit before they blew up. And I was on that Full Blown compilation.
Oh, who put that out?
This fucking label from Texas that doesn't even exist anymore.
Oh, that's crazy. That's tight.
Now that's so I went backwards. So there was the Full Blown. Oh, there was cassettes that floated around of a group called Top of the Food Chain that I was part of.
Uh-huh.
So that was like me, Cerebral, Krang, Drift, you know, and yeah, so there was the, you know, Top of the Food Chain. There's like cassettes floating around. Then there was this Full Blown compilation. Then there was this 7-inch vinyl. And then there was the verse on the bus driver Temporary Forever called Somethingness, which was kind of like Notorious.
Yeah, why was that Notorious? I think rather than Livewire, that's what I meant, is like you had a Notorious verse on a bus driver.
I had a Notorious verse.
Why was it Notorious?
Because I did the whole verse racist shit. I said racist shit about like blacks and whites and Mexicans. And it was incredibly racist.
But like tongue in cheek, or was it really?
I mean, yeah, like, yeah. You know, it was kind of like I was on some Lenny Bruce shit. I was just like, you know, take a joke. You know, everybody's so serious about shit.
Yeah.
You know, and I did like this verse and it was just like really crazy.
Yeah.
On, you know, this really artsy rapper's album.
Yeah.
Who was already this crazy sounding dude.
Yeah.
And then they get this crazy verse on there and like. People were like, you said the N-word, you said, you know, honky, you said beaner, like, you said all that shit. And you're like, you know, what nationality is rhetoric? And they're like, oh, well, rhetoric's Dominican. And I was like, oh, so he just doesn't look black. I was like, no, not if you, you know, mostly don't look at him at a certain angle. Right. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's just like.
What was the reaction like to that initially?
Nah, the reaction was like, I think the honest reaction was pretty fun. Like, people liked it, you know? You know, I had like that Chew from Project Blow pull me aside and give me like a whole lecture about it. You know, I know there's people that didn't like it.
Uh-huh.
And I kind of feel like it affected me because, uh-huh. You know, like they only heard like the black, you know, the black racist stuff. So then they were just like, oh, you know, like fuck that fool. You know, like on the low kind of fuck that shit. Like Chew was the only person that came up to me and said, you know, that's not cool. La, la, la. You know what I mean? And I was like, yo, that's double standard. You
right,
know, what
right.
do you, and what do you think I am? You know what I'm saying? So I was like, I'm not the man holding the whip. Like, I'm giving you a perspective. You know,
right,
like
right.
I'm playing with the irony of a person of color speaking this way.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right.
That's what the fuck I was doing.
Right.
You know, I was willing to push that boundary. I was willing to make people experience that.
Right.
And
which kind of ties into your fucking punk rock attitude.
Yeah.
Like fuck it all type shit.
Well, yeah, I'm a big fan of Fear. And
yeah.
Fear was this group with Lee Ving, and the lead singer would just like, you know, do a lot of stuff that was like contrary to what people's political ideas were. And, you know, piss people off.
Yeah, a lot of crazy. Punk rock is subversive and, you know, abrasive for the point of being abrasive, you know, to make people think, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So I was like, that was my thing back then, you know, I was really, really like kind of absorbed by that punk rock attitude.
Yeah.
So I was like, let me do something. Let me make a point in that way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, what would people say to me if I sounded like a racist white person speaking about black people? If I sounded like, you know, like somebody like racist talking about white people, if I sounded like somebody racist talking about Mexicans, what would people say?
Right.
You know what I mean? And would people ask me what nationality I am, or would they go automatically like put you into like,
you're a
you
white
know,
dude.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, you know, you do something racist, you're going to be considered like tantamount to like a fucking Nazi.
Right.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people are going to overlook that. So that was my like experiment. That was probably the first and last time I was ever artsy on a song.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Why? What would you call yourself now?
Oh, I would never call myself anything. I mean, I was always with the philosophy of doing cutting, pushing the envelope and being soulful.
Yeah.
That's what I always, that was always my mentality. I was like, you know, pushing the envelope and being soulful. So that was my whole thing. You know what I mean? Like, keeping it funky, but like doing something that I thought was interesting because I listen to so much music. So well, what I would say I am now is the same thing I've always been. You know, I've just always been the person. I've always been, you know, willing to, you know, like draw it up and make something that was like, you know, that I felt had teeth, man. I feel like music doesn't have much balls. You know, I felt like hip hop lost a lot of its balls. You know,
yeah.
I felt like punk, early hardcore had balls, and I feel like hip hop didn't. So I felt like I was like, and I already, you know, I'm a ballsy person anyway. So it's just me, my personality,
yeah.
You know? So
nowadays you're working with Hellfire Club.
Yeah.
You just put out a project.
Well, I just put out Dear Diary.
Yeah.
So Dear Diary came out the 26th of March.
Yeah.
And, you know,
are you happy with it?
Yeah.
You took your time with it.
I took my fucking time with it. It's been going swimmingly, you know, it's been going cool.
Dear Diary comes from a reference to like what became sort of your meme in the battle rap world. Yeah.
Yeah. That became my little meme. It was my sketch comedy. It was me, you know, Upright Citizens Brigading battle rapping.
Yeah.
You know,
how did you get involved with the acapella battle rapping?
Actually, man, honestly, the person who got me involved in the acapella battle rapping, you could say was No Can Do, was, but it really wasn't. It was actually dumbfounded that directly got me into it. He asked me to do the bar exam. So I did the bar exam. I said I wasn't going to battle. I said battling, to me, battling is something I always tongue in cheek about.
Yeah.
I didn't care as much about it because I felt like I've been through that, like, you know, 7 years before. I already said to myself, I don't want to battle. Mm. So when I battled at the World Rap, at the, you know, the World Rap Champ, WRC, I was like, already, I was like, fuck it, I'll do it. You know, like, the homie asked me to do it, I want to do it, let me see if I can do it. All right, I did it.
Yeah.
You know, and then, like, fucking.
And then it became a thing. You got pretty good at it. People liked watching you.
I got pretty good at doing me, so then people liked that, for better or for worse. They hated it or loved it. They were polarized by it, and they felt the fucking way that they felt.
Yeah.
But it didn't really reflect me, because it was something that I did reluctantly and kind of tongue-in-cheek.
I feel like a lot of people that make music, that get into the battle rapping, they feel that way. Like, they feel like, I fucking did it reluctantly. Well, and, like, now I'm known for that, and, like, God damn it. And some people embrace it and want to go that route forever, and, like, that's their job now.
Yeah.
And then other people, you know, like you, are like, you know, I fucking love making music, and battle rapping isn't really me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, yeah, you know, and then it turns into, like, this weird curse and whatever.
It's
and
weird duality almost.
You go with it or you don't, or whatever the fuck, like. But, you know, I'm a multifaceted person, so I could joke around in a battle, and, you know, it may not always be me, you know. But I loved it for what it was, and it was fun as fuck. But, I mean, but the Dear Diary, if you're asking how that came about. The Dear Diary thing was me, you know, me and Dumbfounded on tour. We were joking. And I would make up these scenarios where I started off with reading a diary entry of what the guys were doing to me on tour. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like,
dear. Dude, tours always have the best inside jokes.
Yeah. So it was like, and I was like, you know, I was like, Dear Diary, you know, today the guys, you know, put their test, woke me up with, Dear Diary, you
today
know.
Today they shoved a Slim Jim up my ass.
Today the guys woke me up by teabagging me. and you know, it was like, I wonder if that's considered breakfast in bed. The end. You know what I mean? And then, like, you say something like that, but you keep going. It was actually really funny when we did it. So,
so it was kind of like, over into the battle
it after. Came from that. So, you know, I was like, so I did this. And so my first battle was against Open Mic.
Yeah,
and that was what it was.
Oh, that was your first one?
Right, that was my first one.
I was thinking about that this morning, because I knew I was going to interview you, and I'm thinking about that. I was like, oh, man, I remember that battle, and I remember I was supposed to judge it, and I was like, sorry, man, I'm not judging this one, because you guys are both my friends, and I don't want to fucking pick sides afterwards. And, like, you know, that was a fucking good battle. It was close. It was good.
That was fun. You know, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, that shit is just, you know, it is what it is, man. Like, you know, it's like, how serious you want to take that shit.
Are you still doing the battling at all anymore?
Nah.
Yeah.
Man. So like, you know, intuition, I'm going to climb, like, a social ladder of like, ran by kids who decided to battle rap as a hobby, got very good at it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to climb that social ladder for what?
Yeah. Exactly.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like, you know,
yeah,
it's an interesting social structure. That's great. But, you know, that period,
it's kind of in its own little world.
It's really its own little world, man. It's its own little league, and it's its own thing. And, you know, it's sometimes like, you, like I said, you could sit there and work at it all day, and you could be like, but you know what? So the thing is, the same thing that I use in my songwriting is me. And me, I'm not a very similar person to a lot of people. I'm different, right? So I'm not going to be the guy pushing the envelope in a social structure of, you know, I'm not that. That's what I do, music. So that's what I'd rather be putting my energy into, you know?
Yeah. What's next for you?
So what's next for me is definitely this Hellfire, you know, Hellfire crew tape.
The compilation.
Yeah, the Tukey versus Dorner. Okay. It's a crew tape.
Yeah.
It's not a compilation, because there's full-on cuts with us. There's a cut with me and No Can. There's a cut with the whole crew.
Yeah.
There are solo cuts for each of us, but it's the crew tape.
Yeah, yeah.
It's the crew tom.
Yeah.
You know?
When's that dropping? Do you guys know yet?
You know, I don't know what the details are yet, but that's next.
That's going to be featuring you, Kale, No Can, Verbs, Mike, who else?
Milo, Bus Driver.
Milo,
Open Mic, Verbs.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm looking forward to that, too. I've heard it sounds tight.
Yeah.
Are you working on solo stuff again?
Yeah, I'm working on solo shit. I'm kind of, like, teaching, you know, learning how to make beats and shit like that. Yeah. And, you know, just kind of, like, expressing the whatever's with the writing instrumentally, too, because that's another piece of me as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, you know,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to it, man. I thank you for coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's tell the people where to find you online.
The Twitter @ is @RHETERIC. So @rhetoric, right?
Facebook?
Facebook, fuck, it's like something rhetoric.
Yeah.
It's something rhetoric.
The Bandcamp?
The Bandcamp is the / rhetoric.
Okay.
You know, Instagram is RETERIC. You know, SoundCloud is Rhetoric Ramirez 1. The YouTube is The Ramirez 138.
You know what I'm saying? Dave, you all over the place.
We all over the place.
Yeah, so find him online. Just Google rhetoric. You'll find all kinds of shit.
Google fucking rhetoric.
He's out here. RHETERIC, rhetoric. Ramirez.
Oh, yeah.
Hell yeah. Hey, man, thank you for coming in. My name is Lee. You guys might know me as Intuition. You can follow me on Twitter at It's Intuition. My man Ben Shin behind the board suffering through the heat in Atwater Village today. I can see him sweating. He's back there making it sound buttery. Follow him at IamDataBase, base with two S's.
Check that iTunes for Dear Diary.
Yeah, check the iTunes for Dear Diary. You know who speaks highly of Dear Diary is Gavin. Deacon.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, Deacon. We were talking about you the other day. He was fucking raving about it.
Fuck so, yeah.
Yeah, good guy. If you can follow us on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat, and you can find everything at kindaneat.net. The content portal. We're going to have a video up on youtube.com/thatskindaneat of Rhetoric performing. What song are you going to perform?
Roskin Doblin.
Boom. So yeah, thank you guys for tuning in. That was Rhetoric Ramirez, and this was Kinda Neat.